You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Sunday, September 4th, 2011, and we are recording a special live episode of the SGU from DragonCon 2011. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
Evan Bernstein.
Hi, everyone.
And we have a special guest with us today, George Krob.
Very well pronounced. We're in Atlanta. Hello.
It only took us six years.
George, and this is one of the things. This is one of the things that gets edited out, I think, is seriously, every week they say, Krab, and I go Krob. Like every time.
And by they,
you would, something.
You would think that your actual last name was George Krab.
No. But if you were Jewish, you would be a rabbi.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
George Krab.
No. Does it bother you if people pronounce your name wrong?
It doesn't bother me. The one time it bothered me was in London when Richard Weissman introduced me. We were backstage and he said, how do you pronounce your name? I said, well, it's Krab, like rhymes with job. And he's like, oh, great. Excellent. And he came out and he said, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, George Arab. And it was like, that's a totally new one. Yeah. It's been mispronounced. So I've never had Arab before. Yeah. So that was the only time. But even then, you know, it's Richard Weissman saying it, so it's fine. So it's totally fine.
You know,
it sounded good on purpose.
To ab should be expected, though, in England, because they do kebab instead of kebab.
Right.
And hello instead of hello.
Twat instead of twat.
Yes.
You can cut that out.
Really?
No, we can't.
Yeah, no, I said twat once, and they all laughed at me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sorry.
In what context did you say that?
You're a twat. Filthy. Bob, you're a twat.
Okay.
You're a twat.
Just wondering.
They say wanker instead of wonker.
They say wanker.
No, they don't.
Do you say wonker?
Willy
wonker. Wonker is somebody who works in D.C.
Or
a wonk.
Yeah, Willy Wonker. Yes.
Willy Wonker.
In Boston.
In Boston, yeah.
Yo, Willy Wonker.
You got to try the chocolate.
I got your chocolate right here.
Wicked chocolate.
So, Evan,
yep.
This show's going up on September 24th. Actually, when this show goes up, we will be in the midst of our 24-hour live episode.
Wow.
Isn't it amazing?
So why are people listening streaming to this? If we are currently on the air right now,
they won't be.
They'll download it and listen to it on the 25th. Still going to broadcast
go
it
up.
On the 24th.
Yeah, our show goes on XM and other live broadcasts, so we've got to get it out on
time. Yeah, so people could be listening to this on XM.
While we're doing the live
show. Turn off your radio and turn on the live show.
Turn on the internet
right now
and see these people.
You're not going to miss anything. You can come back to this later.
And that's XM 166, channel 166, XM radio.
Not 1066, which is the Battle of Hastings.
That's
166.
That's right, the longbow.
It's my PIN number.
Well, you got to change that
just
now.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, right.
Shit.
don't tell 100,000 people that.
Cut that out. Just edit that out.
Never.
No, we're supposed to be acting like we don't have an audience here. Right?
Rebecca, can I borrow your card for a second?
Yeah, sure.
No, that's funny. A friend of mine in medical school, smart girl, but got her ATM card stolen. So she's telling us at lunch the next day, somebody lifted my ATM card from my purse, but it's okay. The police called me at like 11 o'clock last night to tell me that they got the guy and they got my ATM card. I just had to give them my number to confirm it was my card. And we're all like, no, you didn't just do that. You didn't give him the number, did you? And she was like clueless, totally clueless.
And I think normally on this show we try to refrain from victim blaming, but she totally deserved that.
No, wait. This was med school?
Yes.
And
This woman is now a practicing
this
physician.
Woman is now massaging someone's heart back into life.
Well, they don't teach critical thinking in medical school, but that was a lesson for her in critical thinking.
Yeah.
So what did she say when you said that to her?
She's like, she went white and she realized, of course, we all were like, you didn't do that, did you? And then she immediately was like, why, you think that wasn't the cops?
Yeah,
maybe that was the guy who stole your card. this never works, but we'll give it a shot. Oh, yeah, we got your card. We need your PIN number to confirm it's you.
Yeah, did he laugh when you gave the PIN number?
Right. Imagine what the guy said when he hung up. Right. He's like,
did you hear the cash register sound?
Yeah, ching. Right.
He's literally at the supermarket right now, just checking out.
I kind of,
hold on 1 second.
You hear the ATM.
Right.
I kind of hear him at like the Miami airport.
Eight. Why was that one?
You're right. It is.
Steve, what
thank
about
you,
the following days? Did you say my bank account's empty? What
well, it mean? Wasn't empty. There's a $200 limit.
Well, yeah.
So they took out the $200, and that was it.
Okay. And she actually.
So it's a $200.
Yes.
Less.
Oh yeah. $200 no, she checked right away, and there was
eight seconds after the phone call.
She was down $200.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I tell you.
That's
but Evan.
Cool. Yeah.
24th, other than our live show, what is special about September 24th?
September 24th is Fish Amnesty Day. Yes, you heard it right.
You are slacking off.
Fish Amnesty Day.
It says right there on my phone, Fish Amnesty Day. Can't you read that?
That's when they all work for scale that day.
And I shall.
No, that's when you turn in all your fish without any late fees.
I shall
no?
froze.
No, come on, that's funny.
No, nothing, Rebecca.
You rent your fish.
Yeah.
You go to Fishbuster.
Yes.
Yes, you have Netflix.
Oh, that's good.
No, it was good. I like it. I like it.
Yeah, I haven't slept
thank
for 4 days.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Only George understands me.
All right, so what does this mean, Evan?
From the somewhat unhinged animal lovers at PETA comes Fish Amnesty Day, the animal rights organization's protest against National Hunting and Fishing Day. PETA urges seafood enthusiasts to think of fish as sea kittens in a public relations move intended to render the traditionally cold and scaly fish somewhat into a soft and cuddly creature.
How's that campaign working out for them?
Well, I actually participated in this. I had a fish and I saw that I should treat them like sea kittens. So I dumped the bowl into a litter box with a ball of yarn.
How'd that work out?
Not so good,
right?
Actually.
I have cats and I have a fish, and the fish is not a sea kitten.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination.
See, on that day, I'm going to eat cat. Stampy. It'll be great.
Catfish. Soft and cut. Isn't there a cuttlefish?
There's a cuttlefish,
there's
right?
A cuttlefish, not a cuttlefish.
There's a whole, yeah.
But
whole
we,
category.
As mammals, I think we instinctively don't find fish cuddly or comforting or anything. If anything
no one, no. There's not a lizard out there that finds a fish cuddly. Like,
yeah, right?
It's not just mammals that don't find fish
SpongeBob
cuddly.
SpongeBob has a worm as a pet instead of a dog.
Does he cuddle it?
Well, yeah. Yeah. And he also has a snail instead of a cat. So you have to go down one notch on the evolutionary spectrum there.
You're saying, first of all, you're saying sponges are one notch down.
No, it actually doesn't work that way. But SpongeBob is unusually intelligent.
Tell us about the taxonomy of SpongeBob.
Well, he lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Why didn't PETA just come out and say, you know, let's be aware of the fact that we may be overfishing, or here are the facts we are overfishing. Let's talk more about the real logistics of not eating fish or whatever.
I think the key here is somewhat unhinged animal lovers at PETA. I'd say that would
well,
be the
answer. Well, yeah, I mean, PETA
question.
Is interested in grabbing headlines. So for me, I'm just relieved that this doesn't involve naked women, because that's pretty much their one tactic.
Or Holocaust.
In fact, have you heard
victims.
About the pornography site they're launching?
No.
Nah.
Okay, I swear I'm not making this up. PETA is launching a porn site where they're going to have videos of pornography playing alongside videos of animal torture. So, you know, tune in.
So is that, going to condition you against pornography or in favor of animal torture?
It's really, you don't know. It's a coin
flip. This is a clock.
Suddenly, I'm really turned on by animal torture.
Right. Yeah. This isn't so bad after all.
Or will it condition you?
This is right out of an Anthony Burgess.
Right
out of an Anthony
Burgess.
To get
off, you're going to have to, like, you know, skin some kind of lamb or something. Like, you'll have to finish.
Are they going
to,
like, pry your eyes open and go,
just pretend you're shoving cattle in.
So we're watching porn.
On the side of your head.
We're going to walk through this. We're watching pornography.
Yeah, that's porn.
And then alongside this beautiful thing that's happening here, we have a live audience. I'm showing them.
We're demonstrating.
Wait.
Let's close you guys. Come on.
Now they lean in.
What is wrong with you?
For those of you at home, Rebecca just took
pornography.
Yes.
She is licking that woman's...
Jay, you look great.
Yeah, I know, right?
Good.
Look at this.
Jay.
Pass that around.
Jay, text me that URL.
Okay, we got to examine this.
Steve, you know, you put a picture up.
In my bunk.
You know, you put a picture up on the homepage. Will that be the picture?
That will be the picture for the week.
It's not just that Jay pulled out his phone and started showing pornography. It's that it was queued up and ready to go.
That's his screensaver, Rebecca.
Yeah. What?
All right, Evan, I thought you were going to go for September 24th, CompuServe. Yeah. Offers the first public internet service with email.
Yes, I had that on my list. See, I actually had five things. 1960, USS Enterprise launched, first nuclear aircraft carrier. 1890, Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints renounces polygamy.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
1979, CompuServe launches email, as we know it today. And in 1990, we got good photographs of the great white spot of Saturn. So
wait, what was that email?
The great white spot of Saturn?
There is a great white spot on Saturn, much like the red spot on Jupiter. Right. Same thing, storm.
What was the email one?
The email one, CompuServe, 1979, launches something called electronic mail. Anyone ever heard of
that?
Electronic
mail.
Wow. I didn't know that CompuServe was the company that started it.
Yeah.
I had CompuServe.
I had it too.
First domain, email, everything.
That was awful. It was about 30 characters long. Right? Your email address. It was impossible to type that in.
Yeah, remember
the
your address was 30
characters? Your email address was numbers.
Okay, right.
And then
binary?
It was like the 97 where they said you can have an alias instead of the string of numbers for your email address. Can you imagine?
I have a vague recollection of that, actually.
Well, we are being joined now by another special guest. Brian Brushwood. Brian, welcome back to the Skeptics
Guide. Dude, I am so glad I was able to make this happen. I'm sorry I'm late.
Yeah. No,
that's okay.
You're very late.
But seriously, I walked up at the right moment, because seriously, I had CompuServe when I was 8 years old on my 300K baud modem, or 300 baud modem. 300K. 300 baud modem. Like, I remember watching they had like a game show game that you could play. You would answer yes, no questions and type in, you know, what the Halls of Montezuma is the beginning of what famous song? That kind of crap.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, you basically are waiting for one graphic to...
Not
line
even graphics. I'm talking text. I'm nothing but text. And it's like, you know, the idea that you are, you're like, there's another person on the other end. This is crazy. Yeah. Totally remember that.
So, hey, you missed the porn.
Yeah. Sorry, Brian. There has to be a penalty for being late, you know.
Whatever. You're going to make me drink? Please say you're going to make me drink.
Actually, well, we have the drinks, but we don't have any cups.
Luckily, a fan randomly gave me a flask. I've never had a flask
my
entire life.
You have any Amontillado?
What is this? Is this vodka?
This is a Don Q Cristal.
All right.
Amontillado.
Crystal.
What's
Don Q Crystal?
Isn't that
it's
an Edgar
You have Alan to have
Poe?
A flask of Amontillado.
Flask of Amontillado.
That was like a 2-minute joke.
Wow.
That was awesome, is what that was.
I like that he waited. He stretched it out a bit.
Thank you. Timing.
Yeah, it's timing.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't have to be funny. It just has to be timing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't have to be funny.
Trust me,
I know.
Just
need good timing.
George, did you see anything crazy at the con so far?
Gosh, it's hard to explain. If you haven't been here, it's really difficult to try to relate what this is like.
Yeah.
The fact that you can sort of stand and see Strawberry Shortcake followed by an alien. I mean, an alien. You know, the alien.
Yeah, right. James Cameron,
Xenomorph.
Followed by alien bursting out of Strawberry Shortcake's stomach.
Right, followed awesome. By alien in a polka dot bikini.
Followed by Strawberry Shortcake bursting out of alien's stomach.
Right. Followed by sexy alien bursting out of Strawberry Shortcake.
Personal alien.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's Elvis Darth Vader or, you know, Hello Kitty Han Solo. It's awesome.
Do you know what it is? It's that childlike wonder where you find grown-ups of all ages all of a sudden were playing pretend exactly like we did when we were 12. We had this mishmash of different characters, and we're like, sure, my X-Wing is going to totally blow up your Serenity Firefly class starship.
Right. Why would these two things even be in the same universe? Just shut up.
Welcome to...
Shut up.
I'm going to go back to my flask.
Oh, Brian's right, though. I mean, it is like everybody that's here, like, it's okay to just totally unhinge yourself.
It's almost as though Dragon Con is the physical manifestation of this bizarre mashup of all kinds of ideas, which is, to me, the most amazing part is the fact that in this insane, drunken party where adults are acting like kids, that there can be something like the Skeptics track, where very serious, very important ideas can be explored, and stuff like the podcasting track, where young people who have a message that nobody's heard, but it's going to, you know, somewhere out there is the next guy who we're like, holy crap, I can't believe we met that guy before he became famous.
Are you saying we should move on to our science news items? Is that what
a little bit, actually. Yes.
All right. Well, I know Bob's dying to talk about this next one. He's telling me over here.
Actually, I'd rather
talk
about.
Let's move on. Come on. Let's get going.
I actually said the opposite. I said, let's keep doing this because this is going to be so much more interesting.
Oh, I thought you said move on.
No, this means
move back.
I guess you could have interpreted it that way. I meant this is so much more interesting. And now I'm going to talk about this dry nanomolecular motor.
Yeah, come on, Bob. A nanomotor. How can you not be willing to talk about this?
It's cool, but I love costuming, and I want to keep this conversation going.
But liven this up. We'll get back to this.
Yeah, just think about the costumes you can build with nanomotors.
Bob, give us the cliff notes. Come on.
All right. Scientists have created the world's first electric motor consisting of a single molecule.
One molecule.
No.
Single.
I mean, electric, like what? It gets one electron and then loses one electron and it moves?
No. That's not what happened.
Okay.
Wrong.
Thanks for playing.
I mean, how could this be?
My button.
The
molecule has arms. The molecule has these arms that kind of spiral come out of the center, and they apply an electrical current using a scanning tunneling microscope that causes it to move. So that movement is can be used as a motor.
That is amazing.
Yes. So basically, they run a current through it, and it spins around, and then they figure that they could take that spinning action and then do something to propel it or whatever.
Right.
Cool.
This is published today, actually, September 4th. Is today the 4th?
Yep.
I'm losing track of days.
Yes, sir.
And in Nature Nanotechnology. This is done in Tufts University, and they actually plan on getting this printed. Well, they're going to submit this to the Guinness Book of World Records because it's the. I don't think you can get much smaller than a single molecule for a motor.
At the molecular level, I mean, you can't optically see this thing spin. What do you? Is this something that you can actually measure with an electron microscope, or do you have
use a scanning tunneling microscope to get the current going, and then a scanning tunneling microscope has a super fine tip that you could image atomic scale surfaces with. So they use that. That's actually, not only can you image the surface, but it's actually key in actually getting this thing to work.
Bob, what is driving it? Because what's the force that's driving this thing?
It's sea monkeys.
It's the electrons from the scanning tunneling microscope. They tunnel. They tunnel from the tip.
No, I mean the motor. What's driving the motor?
The electricity goes through the molecule and it spins it. The electricity actually spins the
motor. But how are they feeding electricity to this?
Through the electron scanning microscope.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you, dumb? No, I didn't know. Either. I didn't get it.
It's actually
you're going to insult today.
I know, I'm on a roll.
The molecule is a butyl methyl sulfide molecule.
So what's that?
A bunch of atoms, you know.
Butyl methyl sulfide.
It's tiny. It's 1 nanometer across, which is a billionth of a meter, which is kind of small. One of the cool things, though, is that the next biggest electrical motor was 200 nanometers. So this is huge, huge decrease in size.
Right.
For context, a human hair is 60,000 nanometers. I thought it was 100,000, but they're saying it's 60,000 nanometers.
Well,
so
it's
not all
hair
is the
there.
Same.
Right.
Yeah.
True.
Some
right, George?
Fine hair. Yeah. Hair.
It's very thin, that's all.
Or invisible.
It's cloaked.
It's a gossamer.
Did they mention anything about what they could do with it, where they're going to go with it?
Gossamer. Yeah, one
actually on his driver's license.
Yes.
Gossamer.
Yes, it's like gossamer.
One of the interesting applications, I was kind of disappointed by the applications. I was expecting, you know, nanomotors in your clothes.
Know the applications.
True.
So they're just speculating out their ass on the application.
Yeah, but when you speculate out your ass, it should be really cool, right? I mean, make it sound good if you're really speculating out of your ass.
I would once just like to hear them say something along the lines of, well, you know, we can't use it as it is. This is like the first step in like building something a little bit more complicated. Or
I mean, you've got this machine, this scanning tunneling microscope machine that you actually get this thing to work. And that, what are you going to do with it? Hopefully they're going to scale it down and make it really, you know, really the whole thing much smaller. One application they talked about is moving fluid through these really tiny pipes. When you get really on small scales, friction is a big problem. So things don't behave the way they do in the macro scale. So friction is a big problem. So you've got the fluid going through the pipe, and they're kind of sticking to the side. So if you put these little motors on the inside surface of these little pipes, you can move the fluid along, and that's one application. You know, big.
Wow.
I guess some people will appreciate that, but it didn't sound that hot to me. One that sounded a little bit better was miniature gears and nanoscale electrical circuits.
Yeah,
that sounds kind of cool.
That is cool.
You were hoping to read. You were hoping to read with. with the this technology, they'll be able to make Bob immortal within his lifetime.
Yeah, that would have been good.
That's
or,
a given.
You know, give me an IQ of a million or something really cool.
I mean, is this the kind of thing that could be useful for properly aligning carbon nanotubes, or is the scale like what still way far off for that?
No, that's the right scale.
Yeah,
yeah, but
I mean, if we had essentially a little factory that could properly align carbon nanotubes, I mean, now we got a roadmap to a space elevator, and that to me is huge.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I like the way you think. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move on. Rebecca, tell us about this preacher who wants to register atheists. Apparently, he likes us a lot.
Yeah, no, he's a big fan, and he just wants to know where we all are.
Oh, that's right. Great. Yeah. Reminds me of Germany, 1938.
Well, he's just got a lot of Christmas cards to send out.
I see.
Wants our addresses. If any of you are a fan of X-Men from the 90s, you'll be familiar with this storyline. Maybe it's just me.
It's real life.
Gotcha.
X-Men mutant
registration.
They did make a movie about it, so now I guess it's mainstream, but whatever.
Holy shit, I just realized. I get to pick an atheist name. Like a superhero
Juggernaut
name.
Juggernaut or something.
Yeah.
That's not the...
Did you say Juggernaut?
No. Yeah, he is giving you
Juggernaut. Yeah. My name is Juggernaut.
Wow. I think I just got a new roller derby name. That would be awesome.
Jägermeister.
Yeah, that's good. Jägermeister.
So he wants us to register ourselves with him?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's putting together the list, and the idea is to create... He relates it to similar lists we have of pedophiles, for instance, basically degenerates who you want to know where they are to keep your children away.
Oh, okay.
So with a list of atheists, you could a concerned Christian parent who doesn't want their child to be corrupted could say, you know, stay away from these 3 billion people.
How's he feel about agnostics?
He's unsure about
just
it.
Just for
a second. So what we should
he's
do...
Getting it.
Thank you.
We should send this guy paper mail, like a dossier in each one of us, like, and flood him with more paper than he knows what to do with.
Yeah, well, I think that already happened because his website went down pretty soon after he put this out there.
Well, he put this out there a year ago.
Yeah.
But... The article says the internet discovered it recently.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Then
it gained prominence in the last few weeks.
4chan.
At what point did the internet become aware between last year and today?
It did gain sentience.
But you see that a lot, especially with, because like, there was a number of, there was a viral video that I had that just sat there simmering forever, and then like, you know, 8 months after I posted it, it hit the right person at the right time, and then all of a sudden it hits the grandma circuit.
Right.
And it explodes.
Did you say the grandma circuit?
Yeah, where everybody puts it in an email forward. You know, everybody keeps one of those on their list of somebody who puts the same horseshit that everybody's forwarding around. Yeah. You roll your eyes, you're like, but you don't want to be ignorant of all the stuff that everyone's forwarding around.
Yeah.
So you got to keep.
How viral are we talking?
Huh?
How viral did it go?
Well, the video appeared to be me screwing up the knife roulette trick, which, you know, bingo. It was like, first of all, it got pirated, so it's kind of hard to track. But, like, I know just on Break.com, that one had 1 million. And then also on...
nice, dude.
Unfortunately, my original one only had, like, 300,000. But then, like, on two or three other big fail ones. And then, like, at first I was like, well, this is probably not good for my career for everyone to think I screwed up this trick. But then, like, television in Japan was like, we would like to pay you $1,000 for the rights to broadcast this. I was like, maybe this is a good thing.
Hmm. I hope they made one of those animations of you recreating it.
Yes! Yes!
I love those.
Brian, I think I saw that on Reddit.
Oh, did you?
Before I knew you, I saw it.
Well, and what's funny is like, the reason I say the grandma circuit is because somebody discovered it and they ripped it from YouTube and it was just small enough because it was only 20 seconds long that it could be a like 2 megabyte MPEG file. So everybody was forwarding it around, but I got all these emails like my grandmother just forwarded me this. That's you, bro. So it's like, all right, that's kind of quirky. All right.
Well, next week you can expect an email from your grandma saying, send your name and address to this nice preacher man. He just wants to keep tabs on you.
He wants to do it also to know where atheists are in town so you can go and proselytize.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
We have to save these people. It's our job. So I'm going to have this list available so that if it's in my town, I want to go and knock on the door and say, hey, have you heard about Jesus?
Yeah. So lest you think that he is doing this like because he wants to save all of our souls, and it's a very kind, generous thing. You should know that his website's gone private, but he got a lot of emails from concerned atheists who were complaining about this effort of his. And he offered to share all of the personal details of the people who emailed him with other Christians so that they could pester those atheists. And he, in order to share it just with Christians, he said that they could email him with their phone number so he could call them and verify that they're actually Christians. Or they could have their pastor or church officials get in contact with him to verify that they were Christians, because there are atheists out there who are evil and who are trying to pose as Christians in order to get on his good side. So yeah, he's sharing private information.
So he wants to be the gatekeeper of all things good, right? He wants to be the guy in charge of who's good and who's bad and all that.
He's Santa, basically. Yeah. He's Santa,
there's something we're missing about this news item, right? Like, there's something going on here. Like,
I think he's a local preacher attention whore who's trying to pull a stunt to get people like us talking about him.
It worked.
And we won't do it, damn it.
I haven't actually said his name.
But for his faithful people to donate because they believe in him and the cause he's doing. It's probably a fundraiser, too.
Also, I forgot to mention, the one thing that I think makes this a bit more insidious is that he is an ex-police officer.
Yes.
Which gives him certain
access
and certain privileges and certain authority, that is very intimidating, I think, to people. So, you know, not that he should be judged more harshly necessarily because of what his career or his past career is. But yeah, I mean, obviously this has echoes of some very, disastrous policies and
fascism.
Thank you.
But he's a nothing. He's a pastor of a church that doesn't even exist.
It's not a church. He's not a government organization.
Right. And it's not even a physical church. It's just he has deemed himself a church, so it's a church.
So instead of, you know, being fascist, I think maybe it's more just like stalkerish.
He's a church because so he doesn't pay taxes.
Sure.
That's why.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, pre-internet, he would be on the street corner with a sandwich board. You know.
He probably is anyway.
Yeah, probably
delicious did. Sandwiches.
All right. Option. Do you want to talk about death threats to scientists?
Is the death threats about like David Mabus?
Yeah, we got to talk.
No, it's not Mabus.
Because I was wondering, like, I'm on the way outside.
No, there's an update on it.
That shit showed up on my radar, and I was like, wow, I'm.
Well, basically, he's being assessed right now.
Yeah.
He's arrested.
He's got a trial coming up on the 19th.
His mom, posing as him, sent out apologies to atheists and skeptics. And he's been arrested, and they're analyzing.
That was his mom posing as him?
Yeah, it was his mother.
Dude, I'm telling you what, though. Of all of his things, like, the creepiest was the whole, like, when he was tweeting out to everyone, just look at the cornfield with that creepy
image.
Yeah, look at the cornfield. That was creepy. Yeah.
Goats on fire.
Goats on fire. It will always be my favorite email from him.
What's funny is I'm like, let me hear him out. And then all he does is he provides a greatest hits of awesome skeptical videos.
Thank you.
And it was just like, what? How is this?
And links to Depeche Mode.
So, George.
Yes, Stephen.
So, George. I asked you to suggest a topic for tonight. To discuss something that you feel comfortable discussing.
Yes.
It's in your area of expertise, as we say.
Yes.
He's got his hand firmly wrapped around this news.
Something you've wrapped your head around this topic.
Yes.
And what did you choose?
Whilst I was flying to Atlanta, I was on a very small airplane. 40
very small.
Seats, very small. Very small airplane with 40 seats or so. And it was a 2-hour flight, so of course I had to go to the bathroom. I had to use the facility in the back of the plane, and it was the roof was very low, and so I had to kind of literally, I'm not tall by any stretch, but I had to turn my head to actually fit into the toilet, and to, not the toilet, but the room that contains the toilet.
You really had to go all the way.
George, you don't put your head in the toilet on the
airplane. Is that the problem?
Yeah.
I had that blue coloring all over. Anyway, so now on the airplane, gentlemen might know this better than ladies, but there is a little, that like a flap, like a valve, so that is at the bottom of the toilet, that when you flush you get that sort of sound that happens, and if your stream is, shall we say, strong enough, you can get the flap to open. So it can act like a Pac-Man.
Yes. 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 George, so it's kind of like when you're at the carnival.
That's
and you're,
like a
you're
super
shooting
power. Exactly.
Oh, the clown mouth.
Yeah. You're, exactly. Yeah,
when you're peeing in the clown mouth.
At 30,000 yes, feet.
Oh, my God. Can I just ask, did the first time that ever happened to you, did you think you had opened a portal into another dimension?
Yes, the second time.
Like no, with but the with thing, the force of your urine.
What struck me was that I was really trying, because in my male head, whether or not I could open up the clown airplane mouth valve directly correlated to my manliness.
Yes. You made a game of it.
Yes, the urethral
That's
diameter and the water pressure.
Drink it, clown!
Yes,
drink it!
Exactly. Right. And we lost 10,000 feet. So I'm firing at this thing. I'm firing at this thing and doing my Kegel, male Kegel equivalent.
Kegel.
Yeah, what for guys?
Okay.
Yeah,
George, you missed my line. That's okay. Meanwhile, you're singing, "This is my rifle, this is my gun."
Yes, yes. This is reviving.
I'm gonna pee in this clown's mouth for fun.
Okay. So, I did it. It actually did the clamshell open for a second or two, and it was great. And I felt very, I was good. Because again, I'm standing there with my head totally at 90 degrees, just aiming at this thing, just firing.
You're saying your head was cocked.
Yes, my head was cocked.
Just making sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I can't wait to fly back to Connecticut and try this.
The thing that struck me was I got to thinking that now, from my understanding, a woman wouldn't think this way. Wouldn't number one be able to see? Wouldn't be able to see that this is what's going on because you're sort of seated. And it took me back to as a youth, sort of peeing and shooting your pee at things is a game that guys do, and it's a very early game that guys
on
do.
On occasion,
so no, I mean as a child, if there's a bar of soap in the toilet,
to this day,
you aim at the soap.
To this day, our mother tells us.
You're going to tell that story?
Yes. To this day, we are told, especially when like my mother gets together with
MG.
an older friend that helped take care of us when we were younger.
Yes.
That what our favorite game
Wait,
when we were
start,
like
start with what they would hear. They would hear I would apparently lay on the floor and under the door yell. I would yell fire,
fire,
right?
Fire,
fire. So they'd come
not
running.
Fire in the hole, but he might as well have.
Right.
But and then they would come in and we would be peeing in the outlet to see the sparks come out.
Wow!
Oh,
I never thought to do that.
You guys were idiots.
No,
I can't believe that you survived.
That
freaking metal is what they are.
That
scientists,
is awesome.
Right?
Totally.
You're totally figuring that out.
How old are you at this point?
Me?
How old are you? Like 25,
3, 4.
I have no memory. I have no memory. But I love
you. Have
this
no memory.
Story.
Okay.
Now that all after peeing in the outlet, you don't have any memory.
So here's my point.
I woke up at the hospital.
It just depends on.
The thing that crossed my mind was that this is something unique to because of biology, because of the biophysics, the biomechanics of male urination in terms of it being, for lack of a better term,
aiming.
A weapon.
Yes,
aiming and firing. Is that something that my question is that something which has led to the cliched idea of men being more violent, more a game based. I mean, it's
I don't think it led to it, but it certainly is.
But does the one feed the other?
Of it. It, absolutely. I mean,
well, I don't know because there are women who can lactate across the rooms, and they're
you
not.
You have to tell me, sister.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I have some contrary evidence. For
okay,
you.
All right. Yeah, I'm wondering.
On a similar flight, encountering a similar Lou, and realizing a similar dynamic, it was a game. But to me, it was not a game of penetration or firing. But like the game was, I was like, how much can I fill things up before finally, you know, it breaks?
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then the seal breaks and then it goes in.
Yes.
So it'd be like,
so you're going for volume.
It's a side hatch action.
Nice. Well, guys play all kinds of games.
But it's still a game. It's still, so you are utilizing a tool.
Yes.
For a game.
It's a game.
Which there's a combative nature to it.
Just ordinary urinals are loaded with all kinds of games. I mean, George Carlin did this bit decades ago. Remember?
Right.
Wet down urinal, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can go for whatever's at the bottom of the urinal once you've wet down the entire thing.
Okay.
Hopefully a cake.
But
right?
Is one driving the other? Is the biology of the peeing, does that, because early on, that's one of the first things as a boy that you sort of can do on your own in terms of like you're aiming.
Is the question, do we like to play games while we're peeing because we're guys and we are aggressive and like to throw spears at mammoths? Or do we like to throw spears at mammoths because we learn that behavior from playing with our pee.
Yes, that's what I'm wondering.
I think the real question is, do girls play any games while they're peeing?
I've been trying this whole time to think of a game I've ever played while peeing.
See, and no.
But can a girl aim? But maybe, can they aim?
Yeah. So there are women who can pee standing up. And what you do is you practice in the shower.
Yeah.
And you can do it. You can do it. But it takes
But not effort. At not at 5 years old. I mean,
talented young.
But every boy does this. I mean, every boy
does. Yeah, it's not the sort
this.
Of thing that. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is driving which? Which is it? Is it? And how would you even be able to experiment?
I would say that the fact that you have a penis is not necessarily the reason why men become what we imagine men to be, aggressive or whatever.
I never thought of it in those terms, self-reinforcing.
If you want to talk about it being like one factor in a myriad of different things that feed into the way that we socialize men to be aggressive, then okay.
But if you go back a few million years, is this why men became the aggressive sex of the two?
Well, don't you think though that your first guess would be because men are larger than women, and have more testosterone.
Right. Testosterone, I would
which
think.
Which we know leads to aggressive behavior.
Yeah, but is...
Wouldn't those be the first two things? Maybe the penis was there first.
Was it the external plumbing, the first...
The external plumbing, which then led to those with testosterone could then be more successful in continuing that game into...
Well, and speaking of it as a game, the pee game is what you play until you hit puberty, but the skills that you learn during the pee game have a secondary function once you hit puberty.
Like what?
What are you driving at?
I'm saying you make the ladies go crazy.
Most ladies aren't into that.
No, but I'm saying use the same tool for a different purpose.
No, but I mean, to me, I think it's just this idea of you know, like the game nature, that competitive.
Because you're in an airplane, you're by yourself. And like George focuses at that moment, like your whole world turns into you peeing on the flap.
Yeah.
Like there's no other George other than you and the flap, right?
And but I know every guy has been there. Yeah, every guy has tried to go for distance. Every guy has tried to go, you know, for Morse code, you know, whatever.
Why is this not like a televised event? We have the internet, now.
Right? I mean,
you hold back and then you hold it back, right?
I mean, it's like you get the
going for distance brought back a memory that. Can we talk about this,
Jay? Okay.
Wow. Another child.
There's a bevy of.
Oh, it's another one. Here's another one. We would gather all our friends. Now, how old were we?
Yeah, every.
This
every
was more like 7,
8.
Okay.
No, we would gather all our friends. We'd all go into the woods, and we would show off our little brother Jay, who.
Just stop there. Let me revel in that before he tells the end of the story. They would show me off. So there's a bunch of guys in the woods, and they're showing off their little brother.
Yes.
That reminds me of Evan's button now.
Oh, right.
Popsicles.
So due to some quirk in his anatomy, was able to create a stream that could literally go 12 feet in the air. I mean, I could... Over your head from here. I mean, it wouldn't
be
much of a
problem.
Like Evel Knievel, but with
no, this. I mean, it was epic. We would show him off.
Everybody lay down.
Oh, thanks. I believe you.
He had poor hypoplastic external meatus.
Yeah. Oh, well, that explains
obviously.
It.
Which is?
Imagine a hose.
Yes.
How do you get the water to go really far? You narrow the nozzle.
Like Hank Hill has a narrow urethra.
Yeah. It's not the whole. No. Only the extra.
The nozzle.
Only the
you gotta have a nozzle.
It's only the opening.
Only opening.
The rest of the.
Well, you can do that. You can pinch it off, and you get like double distance.
Yes. Well, it turns out I had a six-inch nozzle on the end of my penis, and they cut it off, George.
Jeez.
He was fixed. Jay was fixed.
To get back.
Why?
To the-
Why did you fix it?
Because the doctor said that over time I could hurt my bladder or something.
Oh. Nah, you win bar bets.
We're all disappointed. No! You can't pee 12 feet anymore.
that's the best part.
It was good while it lasted.
A couple
though.
Of decades of adult diapers are totally worth this.
Wow.
To get back to the main point about, you know, boys playing and things, I just want to offer this idea that we socialize boys to play. You know, more so than we socialize girls. Boys are taught to roughhouse and to play and to fight and to wrestle and to be competitive. These are the things we teach boys to do.
But you don't think they also do it naturally?
It is a social construct that we have built that boys are to be aggressive. And I think that sort of thing feeds into it. And it so happens that you have a tool there that allows you to play a game.
But Rebecca, it's all mixed in. I mean, I think boys are encouraged to be aggressive and play with each other and get along with each other because I think we're all just hardwired for that. I think when you become a parent, you want your son to interact with
No, girls are just as hardwired to play and interact.
No, dude, I've got two girls and we're talking about having a third and it's like, I'm terrified. The only reason I'm not going to have a third kid is because I'm afraid it'll be a boy. After you've had boys over, it's like so different. And
why do you immediately assume that that's biological?
Well,
social.
It has been studied. I mean, it's impossible to completely separate it out because you can't take kids and raise them in a culturally neutral environment, but whatever. But at the earliest age, we can test little boys and little girls. They make completely different free toy choices. Little
I'm not saying that they're not different. Yeah, although
boys will choose guns and trucks,
cars,
and women will choose dolls. And at the earliest ages, we can test it. Now, you have to believe that an 8-month-old was culturally programmed. And I just think there's got to be some hardwiring influence.
I've been fairly unconvinced by a lot of the studies I've seen on that. I think that a lot of them fail to take into account the social conditioning that we are, unfortunately, all subject to from the moment we're born. Shove your kid in a closet if you want and raise him that way.
No, here's the thing. When we found out that we were
pregnant. Are we having the nature-nurture debate? Is that what
it's gone from pissing in airplane toilets.
To nature-nurture.
It's all the same.
Yeah. We're going to finally solve this riddle.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like I was very much on team nurture until we had a kid. I was like, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to program my girl to be a punk rock tomboy. It's going to be great. And it shocked me, especially having two, how different they are. She just doesn't want anything except for to dress up in princess outfits in front of a mirror. It's in her. There's nothing. Yeah.
There are plenty of boys who that's in them. So it's not that. I don't have a belief that, you know, you can decide like, oh, this baby I just had is going to be a little girl tomboy. No, that's not the way the world works. I don't think you can determine that this girl is going to grow up to be, you can't just say that, well, it's a girl, so it's going to love princesses.
Of course not, but I think statistically, though, part of the reason why this frustrates me a little bit is I think I'm detecting in you that the generalization bothers you, but there are generalizations that are accurate.
I'm not saying that boys and girls aren't different. I'm just saying that all too often we just decide, well, it must be biological.
Well, no, I wouldn't assume it's biological. This is a very interesting question. It has been studied. You know, my understanding of the research that we have so far is that, you know, it strongly leads in the direction that there are definitely hardwiring differences between boys and girls.
And I agree with that. But I disagree that, you know,
they're going to
love pink and princesses because they're girls.
Yeah.
Ask any parent.
And that's just it. I don't think anybody really believes that.
Surprising, hard-nosed stubbornness from a kid that comes out of nowhere, and you know it's not from you, it's not from your wife, and it's like there's something in her that's all about the princesses.
My original question was that because the biology is undeniable, I mean, that is a definite different mechanism that is being used.
Yeah.
Can that drive the behavior that might follow it at some future point? Because that's undeniable. That's not a question of nature nurture.
So what
biology.
We need to do, George, is we need to get male babies and cut off their penises and see how they develop when they get older.
I can't see how this would have any problem.
Yeah, we should be able to do this study.
Ask the volunteers.
And I wonder if how, you know, obviously, you know, you're referring to stuff that actually happened in the 70s, and I think that's a big part of why I hesitate to buy into the nurture side of things because that's what fueled that whole belief is like, boys and girls pretty much the same. Just raise them one way or the other. Yeah. And we have some horrific stories of people who took years.
Yeah, attempting to do that, even, you know, biologically trying to make them one sex or the other failed.
They still
develop the way they
because we know that it's more than just your genitals. And that's why, you know, we could actually look at this in terms of looking at people who are transgender, people who are transsexual.
Sure. Interesting. Yeah,
and, you know, seeing like, okay, well, this man who was born with a vagina, you know, was he competitive and, you know, playing those games even before he had the ability to shoot a stream of piss into an airplane?
So, like, I think every time you get into the nature-nurture debate, the end result is it's both.
Yeah.
And it's both in a very complicated way. There's a complicated interplay between biology and environment. And yes, we cannot separate out. And I, you know, every parent wonders that too. I think, you know, when you have multiple children that you believe you've created a pretty similar environment for each of your kids, and yet they turn out
wildly
so completely
different.
And you know, from the moment they were born, they were different. Really, I mean, it is blazingly obvious to parents when you see, you're intimate with a child, you've seen every day of their life, you've known how they've changed and developed and what their environment was like.
Exactly.
It's unavoidable to conclude that, yeah, there was just, some of that personality was just in there, and it wasn't, I didn't inadvertently create it, or it wasn't the TV, it was just, that was the personality that was in their brain, you know, as it developed. We can get into the deeper question of how much of that was, you know, strict genetics versus epigenetics versus environment, whatever, but it just happens, you know?
Yeah.
You know, male-female sex differences is just one part of that. It's not, you know, I have two girls, completely different personalities from day one. I mean, just, and there was nothing that I could point to that my wife and I did to make that happen. It was just completely different. And so, you know, I think parents, yes, it's anecdotal, and yes, there's lots of hidden variables there, but parents do tend, I think, especially if you have more than one child, to get to that conclusion that the kids, they're just the way they are, and we almost come to accept our powerlessness to influence it in the way we might have naively thought we could have before we had kids. The thing you really can influence is your relationship with the child. That's the one thing you really can influence. But you can't mold their personality or mold their likes and dislikes. So there's still one more day left at DragonCon. Tomorrow, Bob and I and a couple other people are going to be on a panel talking about the science of zombies. What's cooler than that?
Dude, nothing. Not now, much. When you say zombies, is that Z-O-M-B-I-S, as in, you know, the
zombies?
Whole drink? Well, no. Isn't that how they spelled it for the people who actually, the voodoo people?
Oh, the Haitians?
Haiti. Yeah. Who actually, you know, put a potion on you.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about voodoo of zombies.
But you're talking about
V-I-E-S. Yeah, we're focusing on
The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Zombies, but everyone thinks real work. Pretty much.
No magic, only science.
So the question is, if they were real, how would they have to be?
Yeah, or can it happen? Can you have, in a non-magical, materialist world, can you have a zombie?
It's a short
panel.
No. I say no.
Wait, guys. Of course you can have a mostly brain-dead person walking around with an unsatiable hunger.
That's not a zombie.
For brains.
Insatiable. Yeah, but we're saying...
Define zombie, then.
Okay, I'll define zombie.
That's 48, whatever. The 48,
the zombie
28
is...
28 days you can do. That's
zombie
great.
Is... A, well, yeah. No, now hold on, George. Settle down.
Except for that we're all
because that's not a zombie.
Slow.
That's infected.
Yeah,
and
we're
that's
all pro-slow zombie,
so zombies
right?
are impossible.
No, but if you take away like the idea that it's a curse, some type of curse, or if it's an animated corpse... Can something like a zombie exist? Of course. Of course. Why couldn't they? They could have biology. They're
like
biology.
A zombie or a zombie?
Well, again, so obviously it depends on definition.
See, now he's drawing a battle line.
Okay, there are animals that have parasites that do take them over.
Yes, I was going to go there.
Okay. The barnacle and the crabs.
But the host is not dead.
Yeah, right. But there are some that where they're infecting their brain to the point where, I mean...
Okay, so picture this. You got some kind of virus, you know, symbiote, right? That as it takes root, it induces, we'll say, 5 minutes of cardiac arrest, something that we would all perceive as death. And then jolts the system and takes full control, and it's got sloppy control of the nerves and sort of shambles around looking for flesh.
But are the cells alive?
What? Cardiac death, though, doesn't cut it, though. I mean, we're talking true
brain death.
No, but guys, the decomposition has begun.
A traditional zombie is supposed to be dead tissue. It's a corpse.
Right. Yeah,
that's
because,
magically
like, the flesh
animated,
is falling off of
magically
it.
Animated, right? through some type of magic.
Metaphysical. Yeah.
Yeah, it's animated. That obviously
super physical or whatever.
But that can't take place. If it's going to get up and move around, there has to be metabolism of some kind.
Well, the other thing with a zombie is its unstoppability. And anything that was going to have a Saculina-type parasite would be stoppable with a gun. They'd be nuts. They'd be crazy. They'd be foaming at the mouth. It would be the equivalent of human rabies or whatever. But they'd be stoppable like any other biological thing would be stoppable.
Well, unless it was running on a different energy source than, you know, our respiration and the
solar
ATP, and kind of
solar energy. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't know. You know,
sun zombies. Yeah, I like
that. They only come out during the day.
Is it too much to ask that a zombie actually digests what it eats? Every zombie story, they don't digest what they eat.
So they're dead.
George,
are you saying
shit.
Zombies don't pee?
Okay, all right. So for sake of discussion, you got a space virus, which means that now you get to have some other phantom form of energy. Let's say the energy thing is handled by some kind of space thing, whether it's, cosmic rays it feasts on or whatever. But meanwhile, you've got these echoes of the biological processes of what this vessel is meant to do, which is why it shoves its mouth with flesh. It has this compulsion to shove with flesh, even though it's not even, you know, it just falls right out the open gash in the belly. I don't know. I could almost see that. It's like, to me, the big thing is just it's the energy question. There's got to be something fueling
something
this
has got to be providing ATP to the muscles
right.
to get them to move.
Right.
Right. And, so, if the flesh is dead, then it's not coming from metabolism of the body itself. So there's got to be some other source of energy, and it's got to be able to get it to, on a molecular level, it's got to be able to get it to the muscle fibers.
Could you have a biological equivalent of a nanite organism that would take over? So some kind of...
It's just animating it like a marionette.
It's a host. It's a host.
You got a symbiote that runs tendrils through everything.
Well,
right.
that's what we've seen. Like, there's a crab, the barnacle attached to the crab does, in fact, do that. It digs in, burrows through the stomach,
right.
and then gets into the... Yeah,
It's a puppet. Like, that would be interesting to have, like, a microscopic
organism.
It could be
fungus. A fungus. Just sort of takes over everything, survives on the decomposition of the body while making it move.
Like George, he's a fungi.
Tapeworm.
But what about the muscles? Without contracting muscle cells, you're not moving anywhere.
I'll high five you for that.
It would have to interface with the muscles, provide it the energy, and control it.
But I don't have a problem with it. It's beyond just providing muscle cells energy. At a certain point, no amount of energy is going to resuscitate a muscle cell. You're going to need new muscle cells.
Why can't a zombie have a metabolism?
Like, huh?
If it's lumbering around in a haze and it wants to eat flesh or whatever, it's a fucking zombie, whether it has a metabolism or not. It's still a zombie-like,
but I think even in the vernacular, zombie means dead. And it's like, if it's dead, then it's not, you know.
It means reanimated.
Reanimated.
Oh, yeah.
Well, So we have zombies that are basically...
Calm down.
Your Honor.
Whoa.
Objection.
May I have order in the court, please? Point of order. So you have zombies that are where essentially just the brain is destroyed in some way, but the body still functions like a voodoo zombie, or the brain is taken over by a parasite of some sort, and then the body becomes a living puppet, but they're a zombie in that they're mindless, right? So that's the original definition of zombie.
Right.
And that's also like the rage virus from 28 Days.
None of that's cool. That's not real zombies.
Or you have the reanimated dead guy, right? So reanimated means they died, but something brought the cell metabolism going again, but in a different way.
Right.
So that it's taken over. And then you have the body's dead. The cells are dead. It's dead. And that's the one where it's tricky.
Then it has to be magic.
Okay, and it is, except if you put in the parasite thing, because a parasite, if it's dead flesh, it's still a scaffolding. It's a skeleton that can be manipulated and moved around. And yes, this is because even, and you know, you guys are the doctors, but like even dead muscle tissue, if you apply electrical current, will contract and react, right? So if you treat it like a puppet that this symbiote is maneuvering around.
Yeah. So it's like a lattice work in a way.
It depends.
There's got to be a centralized kind of... It's got to be able to walk, which to be ambulatory, that's going to be balance. Mm-hmm. That's going to be... All those systems have to work. And if it's just some kind of tiny muscle-filling animal
it's just going to be a blob, you know, like a blob zombie.
Series of them working in concert.
In concert, which is going to be some kind of centralized system of information.
George, you hit on it. The only thing I think that'll work would be some type of, I don't want to say nanotechnology, because I like to think of zombies.
Robo-zombies.
Yeah. No, but you're right, though. It would have to be something on that level in order to really make it work. I can't see
like a possession, like a cellular possession.
Yeah.
If you're taking over all the metabolic processes, is it still dead then, or is it just another kind of life?
Right. Yes. True.
Okay. All right. So
you're asking.
So I guess here's the real question. And this is where we need like the medical expertise. Like, when death occurs, how long is too late to reboot any of the systems? Because I know everything atrophies at different rates.
Depends on the organ system. Some, like the pancreas, digests itself very quickly.
Right. But let's say you
brain
come
cells
in,
die very quickly.
Let's say you come to a corpse 2 hours after physical death.
Yeah.
And you are this space virus, and it's like you moved into a shabby old RV, and you're like, all right, what still works in this thing? Can the nerves still conduct electricity, or?
Yeah, I mean, their nerves are basically wired.
Okay, and if you had,
and
let's say...
Muscles are good at a few hours.
Okay, all right. So you got muscles, and you got the ability to send signals to the muscles.
The nerves are probably going at that point, though.
Now, you don't have, like, your CPU's all busted, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you don't have, the hippocampus or whatever?
No, your whole brain is mushed.
Yeah, the
brain's
gone, but nerves, like general just nerves and muscles are all you really need.
So let's say
if you got
some kind of symbiote, then all you really need is something to pretty much, you know, build a second-rate CPU and run the machine,
yeah,
right?
Just take the place of the brain that's...
But it would have to already have the programming to handle, like George said, the human body.
That's an advanced thing, too.
It would have to evolve along with humans.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying I think it's okay for it to have a metabolism. I like to think of a zombie as anything that's shuffling around kind of mindless that wants to eat you. 28 days later,
nice.
Those people are still full-on functioning as far as their biology. Their biology never stopped. None of that stuff. They got hit with a virus. Their body got taken over by it. It actually physically changes like the brain to a degree or whatever.
Super. You know, I guess their endorphins are just maxed out.
The flaw with that zombie is it doesn't eat anything. Doesn't really eat and survive off of it. Like, so it's kind of like, you know, and the thing that bothers me about the virus things is they move fast. Well, when you move fast, you require more food and energy.
So if you take the 28 days later thing and you just have them eating.
Yeah.
Whatever and digesting. I mean,
then they could keep going.
You know, that's your mindless attacking zombie.
Yep.
But I like slow zombies. I like the numbers.
That's a different issue.
It needs to be mentioned.
That's a whole other hour of
Romero
zombie
versus
discussion.
Versus
you're going to cut me off at the knees here.
Just so you can't run.
Fast zombies, like, then why do you need a zombie then?
But we're not talking about what you want. We're talking about what's physically possible.
Well, actually, right. I mean, I really, technically, yeah, fast zombies would be the most possible. They'd just be alive and crazy.
Which is kind of a surprising conclusion. I don't know. I would think that, like, a reanimate.
No, you're right. That is counterintuitive.
Would be the, yeah.
Yeah, but
this is a good discussion.
The definition of a zombie to us, like, at our core, like, we all got the slow, shambling, eating flesh and all that. That's, like, you know, that's what we've picked up from our culture and everything. Because that evolved. I mean, you could literally go back and find out where, like, the first zombie came up in a movie or whatever. You know, it didn't really, even though zombies
Night
came
of
from
dead.
George Romero.
Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
That Italian one that was a little before that. Wasn't there an Italian one?
Yeah, but nobody saw it.
No, I know, but I mean, but it existed.
Not in America.
There was a
Really? It was called This Is the First Zombie Movie, Bitches. Remember that?
But in Italian.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
I think there was subtitles.
Pre-Romero?
It didn't have the same rules, but it was sort of a vampire, undead extension kind of.
Am I going?
Am I crazy?
I thought there was
an Italian guy that did something. It was like a couple years before.
Possibly a variant, but the modern conception of a zombie was.
Yeah, oh, Romero set the
was
rules.
Romero.
He set the
I mean,
stage.
He started it.
Yeah.
And he said his was a virus, or supposedly was a virus. That's what you heard on the TV, that there was some crash.
No, it wasn't a virus. No, it was a satellite. A satellite.
It was a satellite.
I think you're assuming virus from.
They just say on the radio something
crash.
Is up with a satellite crash.
Romero did not want to give it. This is why this happened. But there was some vague reference to a
and they never
Venus
said zombie.
Probe, and that was it. He didn't say this is it. He never wanted to say exactly why.
Speaking of which, on this subject, I mean, I assume you guys have read Max Brooks's
books,
The Zombie Survival Guide and World War Z.
And they're making the movie, World War Z has some very scary things.
Brad Pitt?
Don't expect the book, though. They're changing a lot.
That's what I'm saying. It's scary in that they sound that like they're not respecting the source material. Because what was great about the book was that it was after the fact. It was an oral history of a war that came and went and piecing together from the fragmented stories. And instead, it's a apocalypse about to happen and about a guy running around trying to stop it.
What?
Yes. Which is nothing.
Wait, are you telling me Hollywood has messed up a book adaptation?
I'm telling you for the first time ever, this is happening.
Goodness. I didn't know it was that drastic.
I was super disappointed when I heard.
Well, I think we should move on to science or fiction. Last segment of the show, and Bob is going to be running science or fiction this week.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week, blah, blah, blah. All right, number one. Okay, number one, guys. IBM is building the largest storage array ever. When complete, it would allow for 120 exabytes of storage.
Exabytes?
Number two. Toshiba recently reviewed its new No Glasses 55-inch 3D TV. It's the first large-screen 3D TV that does not require any glasses and can accommodate up to 9 people. Number three, a recent study shows new evidence that reducing soot emissions into the atmosphere could slow melting of Arctic ice faster than any other quick fix.
By the way, for the record, this is hugely exciting because this is always my favorite segment. I've never gotten to play along before.
I'm going to poll our live audience first.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's do that. All right. Who thinks that the one about the IBM
raise your hand.
Storage array?
Blink your eyes.
Clap if you think the IBM storage array is the what do you do? Is the fiction?
Okay. It's harder with a small crowd because they're like, is anybody else going to clap? Nope.
All right. Number two, that the 3D TV with no glasses is that who thinks that's fiction? Clap.
Okay. A couple of people.
Wow. A sixth of the audience. And then the recent study, how about number three, that reducing soot emissions in the atmosphere could slow melting faster than any other quick fix. Yes, reducing soot.
The audience is in number three.
Okay. So.
All right. So number one, IBM is building the largest storage array ever. When complete, it will allow for 120 exabytes of storage. This one just seems like it's so easy to take. I mean, how am I going to know if it's 130 exabytes or 130 petabytes?
Yeah, we have a rule, though, about not doing shit like
that. At least double or half.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, like an order of magnitude. It could be petabytes instead of exabytes, and I'd be totally wrong, right? Yeah.
I like
petabytes. I put them in my pedophile server. That's not even my joke. Number two, Toshiba recently previewed its new no glasses 55-inch 3D TV, world's first large screen 3D TV that does not require any glasses, can accommodate up to 9 people. Yes, I totally believe this is 100% fact, unless the numbers are twitched. I know Microsoft has been talking about this for a while. What they do is they use facial recognition, technology to figure out. Now, right now, at CES this year, Toshiba, same company, showed a display on their laptop that when you went up, it recognized your face, and it had a lenticular display, and when you moved one side or the other, it would follow to adjust. So it was kind of no glasses. Everything else is just sweet spot. You have to be in the exact right spot. So I'm going to say, I know that Microsoft a year ago was saying they expected they could do it with 6 people, so to be told that they have a prototype with 9 people, I totally believe that. Number three, a recent study shows new evidence reducing soot emissions into the atmosphere could slow melting of the Arctic ice faster than any other quick fix. Okay, my gut says that you would want, if you wanted to slow warming or slow the melting, you would increase soot emissions and that you'd have more crap up in the sky to bounce off more sunlight. However, if you, of course, the soot comes down and it lands on the ice where it's a darker color and absorbs more of the heat energy. This one's just such a wild card. I'm going to say number three is the fiction, but you don't get to qualify, do you? You don't get to say...
No.
No caveats.
All right, no caveats. I'm going to say number three. That's it. I'm going all in on number three.
Well, I think number three is not the fiction. The soot emissions. The soot emissions. I'm saying the number three soot emissions is not is true. The Toshiba 3D TV also sounds totally true to me. I know that that's being developed. I'm surprised that IBM is still in business.
So that's the fiction.
I think that is actually the fiction. I think that they are so concerned about what they're doing that to build this large storage array, unless it's some kind of promotional thing to be able to talk about that they have the largest promotional array. I'm going to say that the first one, IBM is building the largest array, that's the fiction.
Like George, it's between the first and the third for me, the IBM or the Arctic Ice. But the no glasses 3D TV one made me laugh when Brian was discussing it. It sounded plausible to me, but I never really thought about the actual facial recognition technology, and it made me laugh because I have a laptop that is supposed to unlock my computer when it sees my face. And the goddamn thing hasn't worked.
Yeah, mine doesn't work either.
It's got that condition you talked about earlier,
and, yeah,
right?
Yeah, you have to be like the exact, yeah, it's got the same condition as me. Yeah, it's face blindness.
Exactly.
Thanks for nothing, Alienware.
Alienware, very nice.
I love that this is happening. This is possible, and yet my shitty laptop can't.
It's not a shitty laptop, for Christ's sake, Rebecca.
I'm just saying that to piss off Jay so I can hit my button and say, calm down, little peach fuzzy man face.
Fuzzy little man peach.
Calm down, fuzzy man peach. So I'm gonna have to go with our small but obviously intelligent and discerning audience here and say that the soot emissions in the atmosphere is the fiction on this one.
Well, the IBM one, I don't know. 120 exabytes of storage.
Can I try to sway you on that one?
No.
Just to mess you up?
Nope.
An array.
Contamination.
I just want to mess them up. Yeah
that's fine.
That's just wrap your mind around this. Like, it's like you got terabytes, right? Which you have maybe one or two of in your home computer. Like 1,000 more is a petabyte, and then a million more is an exabyte. I mean, there are 120 of those?
No. I get you. But here's where I think it's science, Brian. Because it says IBM is building the largest storage array ever when complete. I think that's the key. It might not be complete for 10 years, Brian. We don't know. And so that I think that's a giveaway that one's science. And 3D TV, 55. And sure, yep, I'm good with that. Used to be in the TV industry. That totally makes sense for me. All that's left is the soot in the atmosphere being fiction.
Yeah, so regarding the soot in the atmosphere, if you remove soot from the atmosphere, it actually will cool the Earth because it allows that radiation to escape. What happens is the soot in the atmosphere keeps the radiation in because it bounces off the ice and it bounces off the soot and it kind of stays in.
Gotcha.
But when the soot's gone, it lets it go back out into space. So that one makes sense to me. The 3D TV, I just don't know enough about it. I mean, I did read some stuff. I'm constantly reading about this, and I did read some stuff that you wrote, read, Brian. But I'm going to say that the IBM, the storage array, and this is, I'm going to say no to this one, Bob. This one's the fake because of you. Because I remember having discussions with you about this on several occasions where we talk about, like, just getting to the exabyte, to one exabyte, is a triumph. 120 exabytes. You know, I know that Evan did bring up a good point when he said at some point or whatever, 120 exabytes, I don't think we're even, I don't even think we're anticipating that size yet. We haven't even gotten a petabyte yet. Like, I don't know. I'm sure that a lot of companies have petabytes out there, but when you get, like, you know.
Shut up, Brian.
Sorry. We're not knee deep in petabytes to the point where we're talking about exabytes yet. I don't think. So I think that one's the fake.
Everyone's wrong.
Doctor's number four.
I have no idea. Yeah, I mean, 120 exabytes, that's an awful lot. But, you know, it's an array. They could just keep tacking on more memory, and IBM's into doing this kind of stunts. So it's kind of there's certain plausibility there. It would be impressive. The no glasses 3D TV... That's impressive. With nine, it's big, but still, it can accommodate nine people. Are they like all arranged like the Brady Bunch? You know, in the tic-tac-toe formation?
Yeah, Alice is in the middle.
Oh, I didn't even think about that, because the thing I was talking about was all about, like, motion tracking. It would recognize your face, and it would actually move in order to keep you in the sweet spot. That's Microsoft science, but it could be that they just have 9 sweet spots preset up.
So that's impressive. So I'm not sure about that one. And then the, I'm going back and forth on the soot emissions, because you can kind of make sense out of it either way in terms of, is it reflecting sunlight and therefore would not have an immediate negative effect, but it's black, so it absorbs heat. Especially if it's like, I thought the same thing you did, Brian, if it settles on the snow, that could have a pretty immediate effect. So I think that one's probably science, which means nobody went for the TV one, right?
Nope.
No, sir.
Right. Are you going to cover the spread?
I'm going to cover the spread and go for the TV.
Nice.
All right. Someone is guaranteed to be wrong.
Yeah.
Well, so Bob would be taking this in reverse.
That was the way you framed it. Somebody was already guaranteed to be wrong.
All right, Bob. How'd we do?
All right. So
Wait. We have to see how we influenced our friends.
Oh, yeah. All right. So
it's
now
new with this the whole life.
All right. So the IBM storage away. Who thinks that is fiction? Clap.
Oh.
Ooh, wow.
That's 100% more than before.
I got one person.
Yeah. And that's like a tenth of our audience. Right. So that's
actually, statistically, I'm not doing bad. I did pull one person over.
Improvement.
All right, number two, 3D TV. Who thinks that is fiction?
More
that
people.
That got a few more.
Wow.
Loud.
Wow. Just Steve just convinced.
What a bunch of assholes.
All right.
Yeah. See the power number, you weld?
Yeah, you do
see
have
what's,
power.
Oh, you're the
number
emperor.
Three. Argument from authority, people. Argument from authority.
Yeah. Why don't you guys just join a cult? Right?
Number three, soot emissions. Who thinks that's fiction?
All right. I think
for some reason.
Evan, get your thumb off the scale.
Bite me.
So it seems that the 3D TV has taken...
Even though I prefaced my thing with, I have no idea what that
yeah, happened. I have no idea, and I'm just doing whatever this Steve because says, I'm I bitter that him. Bob might win.
Okay, so let's...
I just realized that you're telling people that pay tickets to see a special show on the 12th floor of a hotel in Atlanta, you guys should join a cult.
Yeah. Suckers.
What would that be like?
After the show, there's a bowl of Kool-Aid over there for everyone.
We have Jell-O shots.
Jell-O shots. Right back.
They're free.
Join our call. We've got Jell-O shots.
All right,
that's
Bob.
Our
come
next
on now.
T-shirt.
All right. So Steve thinks that the 3D TV one is.
This isn't looking good for Steve.
He thinks that's fiction. Toshiba recently previewed its new No glasses. I don't need to read the whole damn thing.
No,
again.
You got it.
But we get the idea. And that one is. Science. I was a little surprised because I hadn't been following it too closely lately, but I always heard sweet spot, and you pretty much totally nailed it. I think they had sweet spots. Apparently, this TV's got a lot of not just sweet spots though. It'll find you. They've got these range lenticular lenslets that guides the images of the TV, and so it seems like they track where you are, and it's a pretty broad range. You could be in a pretty wide area, and it'll find out where the faces are.
But how does it show each eye a different image?
Well, if it knows where your face is, it knows kind of how to send them.
You ever see those stickers that, you know, you twist them one way or the other and the image changes or whatever? So that's what's over the television. And it makes small adjustments to that to adjust where it is according to the face tracking.
That is like, so basically it knows where your face is and it's shooting one signal to one eye and one
and
signal to
and it knows
to
different people. It keeps people different.
Right. Hello, Frank. I see you now.
Wait, but you already see that if you guys have the Xbox Kinect. It's so disturbing.
It's like one step from Skynet. Man.
Yeah, like you'll leave the room and the screen will go dark and you'll walk into the room and the computer, you know, the Xbox, it suddenly lights up and it'll be like, oh, you're back. What's
Hello,
up?
Hello, Brian.
Yes.
Exactly.
Mine says,
can't
what's
believe
up,
you're
bitch?
Watching this game.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go to three. Recent study shows that new evidence of reducing soot emissions into the atmosphere could slow melting of Arctic ice faster than any other quick fix. And that one... That one is science.
Oh!
Yes, I knew it.
Yes. Get out of town.
No one.
Let me read a little bit about it. A new study of dust-like particles of soot in the air now emerging as the second most important but previously overlooked factor in global warming. The new study provides fresh evidence that reducing soot emissions from diesel engines and other sources could slow melting of sea ice in the Arctic faster and more economically than any other quick fix. A scientist reported in Denver, Colorado, in August.
You know, I I'm just saying specifically about melting ice. It didn't say anything about warming the earth or any of the global temperature. Yeah. It just said melting the ice, and that totally makes sense.
Damn it. Which means, number one, IBM is building the largest storage array ever. When complete, it would allow for 120 exabytes of storage is fiction.
Did you totally make it?
And IBM, it turns out, is in fact defunct.
The real item said IBM is hard at work assembling largest blah 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 120 petabytes.
Thank you.
No, that's not shit. No, it's not. We're talking three orders of magnitude.
A thousand times more.
Come on. Back me up on this.
Three orders of magnitude.
How did I get that? How many times have we talked about this?
I don't know. Jay, you know, petabyte, exabyte, I don't know. I thought I might not get you on that, but I figured, you know,
Bob, we just talked about this like a month ago. We were like literally talking about exabyte, and you're like, oh, we may never see that. You and I may never see exabytes. Wow.
Are you just saying it's sloppy for him to discuss with you and then use that knowledge?
No, I'm just saying. I'm shocked that you didn't know I was going to nail that one.
Shocked. Well, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, with the breakthroughs that they're having, I don't know. It's got everybody else.
That's right.
Well done, Bob. You stumped a number of us, including the audience.
So. Well done. Yeah.
How do you feel now?
That was good.
Feel good? Big man?
Yeah, right?
George, you got that one right, too?
You better recognize.
George and Jay.
Nice going, guys.
I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Do your high five.
We did.
They fist bumped.
We'll hug it out later.
Well, Jay.
And our one audience member had it, too. Our one audience.
Yeah, that's right.
Jay, do you have a quote for us?
Again.
I have a quote sent in from Miranda Richards. And this is another quote that I had read somewhere else before. And this quote is from a person called Ellison S. Onizuka. And he said, every generation has the obligation to free men's minds for a look at new worlds, to look out from a higher plateau than the last generation. Ellison S. Onizuka!
Well done, Jay. Well done.
And who was he? Onizuka was the first Asian American astronaut. The street in the library of the school his daughters were going to at the time of his death is now named after him, as is the street where the monument is located. The visitor center at Mauna Kea bears his name. A shuttlecraft on the Enterprise D bears his name as well.
That's right.
Very cool.
Well, thank you guys for joining us, Brian.
Yeah,
it's always a pleasure.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad the schedule works out. Sorry it's late.
What do you got coming up soon?
Just get ready to go shoot new episodes of Scam School. Still new episodes every Thursday at scamschool.tv. We're coming up on our big 200th episode.
Awesome. Good job, man.
Yeah. And, of course, on Twitter, I'm at Schwood, S-H-W-O-O-D.
And George, you're becoming a frequent flyer on the SGU.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here, guys. I love doing this. I love hanging out with you guys, and I know I have the pictures of you that allow me to blackmail you to have me be on the show. And I really appreciate it.
George is joining us. Well, Brian's joining us remotely on the SGU 24.
Yeah.
George is literally driving his ass up at O Dark 30 to come hang out with us.
Okay, I
thought that was a secret.
It is a secret. This will be edited.
That was a secret? George, that's a secret since when?
Yes.
Right now.
Dear
idiot. All right, everyone look here at the light and flash. Okay, we're good.
George actually creates my favorite podcast, and we saw George's live show last night. Again, it was
so
awesome.
Good.
Dynamite. For those guys that know, I do the Twitter songs. So I brought up Evan and we brought Brian, and they did a phenomenal job. They knocked it out of the park.
Yes, they were literate, and they could read.
They were very good.
Yeah. And I have opposable thumbs.
We've been working on that all year.
I had these two guys do it once. It was at Nexus, I think.
These two guys were awful.
It was just so, no. Oh, wait, that was you.
No rhythm. There was no rhythm.
Couldn't tell one from the other.
GeologicPodcast.com as always. And this year, I'm doing a live album. We're going to do a live DVD and live album, which everyone's invited to. Of course, we'll spread the word once that's happening. That's going to be a phenomenal, huge, big production, which I'm really excited about.
Awesome.
Sounds great.
And this is our first episode recorded in front of a live studio audience.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. Studio audience, folks.
Not a live show.
Yes, they saw all of the blemishes and the prep.
What'd you guys think, by the way?
Yeah, was it a good time?
Was it cool? Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you all.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you all.
And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at www.theskepticsguide.org. You can also check out our other podcast, the SGU 5x5, as well as find links to our blogs and the SGU forums. For questions, suggestions and other feedback, please use the Contact Us form on the website, or send an email to info@theskepticsguide.org. If you enjoyed this episode, then please help us spread the word by leaving us a review on iTunes, Zune, or your portal of choice. We'll be right back.